What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. This week's episode of the Corner is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. You know, me and Andreas are always covering events, we're always writing articles, but when we do have time to sleep, we lay our head down on a nice, pillowy, soft, premium mattress from Casper Mattresses. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and going straight to you. No showrooms, no middleman. Everyone's seen those creepy guys trying to follow you around the department store. None of that anymore. You get your hands on a nice premium mattress by going straight to Casper Mattresses.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got to get my rest. So Casper Mattresses is the goods. I'm telling you right now. So listen, you can get $50 off of any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/the corner and entering the promo code the corner. That's one word, the corner. That's Casper.com/the corner, promo code THECORNER. Terms and conditions apply.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another week of the Corner Podcast. Shout out to the sponsors. Like we said earlier, I'm Kel Dansby, here with Andreas Hale. You should know this. We've been here for 2 years now. If you are new, thanks for listening. Make sure you go back and listen to all the dope stuff we have before. But right now, we have to recap WrestleMania. We have to preview UFC 210 and talk about some good boxing that we have this weekend. And, you know, we throw a little bit of other stuff in there as well. Andreas, where should we start? You know, we usually start non-combat, right? So how hype are you for this Kendrick album?
Are you sure it's a Kendrick album?
I'm not. I mean, reports came out today. Didn't Complex apologize? But what are we? Year 2000? It's a compilation?
Nobody knows what it is.
And Dynasty? It better be an album. He's released two singles. I'm pretty confident that it's an album.
That's the hope. It's just, we don't know. We don't know. He told everybody to get their shit together on April 7th, and he dropped Humble, and he dropped The Heart Part 4, which The Heart usually proceeds or comes right when an album's coming out, but we don't know. We don't know what's coming out. So I don't know. If it's an album, great. If it's not, I'm fine with that too. I don't, you know. I'm listening to this Joey Badass album right now,
which is really dope. We don't know. I have a hard time believing you don't know.
No, I don't. They won't. Look, man. I mean, full disclaimer, everybody knows that I'm close with those guys. They won't tell me anything. I texted, was like, yo, why y'all talking about Big Sean like that? And I just got an LOL. And that's all I got. They're not going to tell me anything. I mean, the way the industry is nowadays, you can't really, when you're trying to keep something a secret, you really got to keep it a secret. And even though I've done stuff, I've produced commercials for them, I've shot documentaries for them, I'm not in that camp. So they're not going to give up the goods to even somebody like me, unless I was in the studio with them. But other than that, they're not going to tell me. So I don't know.
So you got to wait like the rest of us.
Yep. I have no advantages here.
That's hard to believe. First time ever. Another thing that we got to touch on is a thing you guys did over at Two Dope Boys that I found was super dope. And we really didn't get to touch on it last week, but now the whole bracket played out. You guys did a March Madness style bracket for diss songs, and everyone voted. The fans voted. It was really close at good battles the entire way. How did No Vaseline win the whole damn thing?
How does it not? If you got to, all right, so we've gotten a lot of heat from this bracket, and not because of No Vaseline, but we got a lot of heat for Ether beating, losing the Takeover. That's where all the heat has come from. Not for No Vaseline. Takeover is better. And I will go to my grave with anybody that says Ether is better, because people will say, well, like, the concept of a diss is now called Ether, but that doesn't make it a great diss track, right? Like,
that's like arguing, like, when you shoot a paper towel into the wastebasket, you say Kobe. So it's the best. He's the best ever. Or, you know, when you catch a ball over someone, it's called Mossed. So he automatically wins over Jerry Rice.
Yeah, no, it's crazy how people look at it. And, you know, in my write-up, I explained how we got here. And people were like, well, there were facts in Ether. But there's not a lot of facts in Ether. There's a lot of accusations. It's not facts. Jay-Z was drilling Prodigy and Nas with facts, and what it did was made Nas come out of this jiggy slumber that he had been in with bullshit like Uchiwali and become what he was supposed to be, which is one of the best rappers ever. And Ether and Stillmatic, all that followed because of Jay-Z. But if you look at Takeover, the production was better. Jay-Z like was gut punching you know, he sent a little feeler to Nas right when he finished dissing Prodigy, and then he went at Nas, and then he did it at Summer Jam with the ballerina picture. I got the picture. I seen it. Yo, that is one of the greatest diss tracks ever. But your question, how did No Vaseline win? It goes a little something like this. When you look at the year 1991 and how big the world's most dangerous rap group was, which was N.W.A., and it was Ice Cube. And Ice Cube left N.W.A. because of financial matters and was quiet. He put out America's Most Wanted. He put out the Kill It Will EP. Meanwhile, N.W.A. was taking shots at him for leaving. And people, it's not the internet era, so nobody knew what was really going on. Like, you kind of wondered. But when No Vaseline came out on the Death Certificate album, what he did was they never came back, and it wasn't even over for N.W.A. But they disbanded. They never came back, and all he did was give them facts about their financial status, about moving to the suburbs, about having dinner with the president. There was no diss track on that level at that point in time, and there was no diss track that did more damage than No Vaseline. The only person who's coming close to that much damage was 50 Cent getting rid of Ja Rule. But other than that...
And that was dirty.
Yeah, and it was dirty. But, I mean, Ja Rule had kind of pretty much hung himself at that point by doing so much mainstream music that he was an easy target for somebody like 50 Cent. N.W.A. was still, like, 100 miles is running, but people really still liked it. But they noticed that it was missing, like, the social conscious elements of Ice Cube. And if you go back to No Vaseline and listen just to the first 30 seconds of the sound bites that he grabs, yo, he's obliterating them consistently through the entire song. Like, even with Takeover, the first verse was just kind of like a warm-up, and then he went in. Cube wasted no time giving it to everybody in N.W.A. and Jerry Heller and pissed everybody off. He didn't care. So, yeah, to me and to the group, we recognize it was the greatest diss track of all time. It did the most damage. It did what it was supposed to do, and they never could truly come back from that. They had to say, fuck it, he wins.
That's tough, man. That's tough. I mean, it might be my East Coast bias.
Yeah, it's hard. But I mean,
it's rough.
It's hard. Like, to pick the best diss track ever is hard. Like, I'm very partial to Common's The Bitch in You. Like, for a lot of, like, I'm very partial to that song because I felt like what he did as what was an underground rapper to somebody as big as Ice Cube and the West Side Connection with one song, it was brutal. Like, that was rough, what he did to Cube. Like, having Farrakhan, having to step in. Like, that was rough. I'm very partial to that. I'm also very partial to Cannabis' second round knockout, because I don't give a fuck what anybody says. Cannabis murdered LL on that song. And if it wasn't for LL's celebrity, he would have never came back from that shit. Because even that Rip the Jacker and all that other bullshit LL
pulled out, it was nowhere near as close.
No, and I'm partial to those particular songs, because as far as diss records, if you take away the status and of who the artists are, those are, like, really hard-hitting disses. I love Takeover, and I will go to my grave saying that Jay-Z burnt Nas up. I thought Ether was cool. I've always thought Ether was overrated. I'm not a big fan of the Ron Browse production. I'm just, the disses felt juvenile. They felt out of Nas's element. It felt like he was doing something he's not built to do. But that's always going to be my argument. I can see why people go otherwise, but it was fun. You know, like, we knew we were going to get some shit from it. And because the fan vote was part of the collective vote, and we were really like, damn, people were mad that Hit 'Em Up didn't win. But if you listen to Hit 'Em Up, the Outlaws really ruined that song.
Yeah, they're like, trash.
there were lines, and there was a lot of passion. But as a song, how many people really listen to Hit 'Em Up? Like, I still listen to No Vaseline because that shit was bumping. Like that shit knocked, and it was a diss track. Like, Hit 'Em Up is not, you quote it, but I don't know too many people riding around listen to it. Against All Odds might be a little bit harder than that when you really think about it, but, you know, people's opinions. It is what it is.
Now, I forgot even about Hit 'Em Up, because that's widely considered the best diss track ever. But it's just so disrespectful so early that it makes you forget how bad it is throughout the entire song.
Yeah, like, after the, you know, fuck your bitch and the click your clean, like, all, I fucked your fat, I fucked your bitch, you fat, like, after all of that, it kind of dries up. And then the end is like...
That shit was like WrestleMania this year, which we'll talk about.
Which we'll talk about.
It's really dope early. And you just carry it through.
Like, most people can quote, like, dope diss records. I don't know anybody that's going, get out the way, yo, get out the way. Like, nobody's doing that. Or Idi Amin's verse, like... It was dry, man. Like, Hit 'Em Up was dope. Like, if it was just Pac, it would probably might have won. But I don't even know if he had that much. Like, he gave up so much ammo in that first verse. It was like, damn.
Well, that's most of the left. Song with the Outlaws. If you're like, yo, if this is just Pac, it'd be pretty fucking dope.
Yeah, it would, but it is what it is. We'll have more tournaments. We thought of this idea like a while ago, and we were like, all right, we're going to do more of these. But people were pissed, rightfully so. That's what we do these things for. We don't do them to make everybody happy. You know, you have a vote. Your voice matters when to break ties and stuff like that, but it is still our bracket. So it's like, come on, man. Like, you guys can't have every word and everything that we do. So it is what it is.
Understood. Now we can quiet the people who are wondering, like, yo, how does that win? I saw someone online didn't have it in their top five.
Yeah.
That's bananas.
Yeah.
But you never know with the people. Let's talk about what we come here to talk about, man. Combat sports. We have UFC 210. And we're starting off with UFC. Because there's so much pro wrestling to talk about, WrestleMania and the fallout and the Raw after Mania, that it deserves its own segment all the way at the end. So you guys know where to find the wrestling. UFC first. 210 headlined by DC and Rumble Johnson, part two. Let's go up, I'd say the main card and just give our predictions.
Yeah, we can talk about it a little in depth.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been talking about it all day. Like, people have been asking me about this. Like, this is weird, but all right.
No, it's actually a really good card. I mean, Chris Weidman needs this win.
He does.
You go from undefeated to 3-fight losing streak. Life comes at you fast. But Musashi is he's the hottest guy in the division. How do you look at anyone else and say that they're better than him? I don't know. Pearl Gonzalez, only thing I know is that she's hot. Yo, she posted something on Twitter today. And shout out to Mike the Truth Jackson for alerting me to the sexiness. Woo, she's fuego.
Yeah, we did a piece on her today over at Champions on who is Pearl Gonzalez. And people just like, yeah, who is Pearl Gonzalez? And I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
this is going to be rough.
She caught fire. And then we have Thiago Alves, versus Patrick Cote. Should be a good fight.
Yeah, stand and bang. Nobody's going to the ground in that one. So I'm predicting somebody's going to get knocked out. But yeah,
and then Will Brooks versus Oliveira. He needs, once again, he's always been a boring fighter, kind of. It takes his opponent to drag excitement out of him.
Yeah, I mean, Will Brooks has never been truly exciting. He does what he does. Unfortunately, the Alex Oliveira fight, you know, Alex came in like 20 pounds over and broke his rib. So there's not a lot to take away from that. Charles Oliveira, on the other hand, he should be able to manipulate this guy and beat him. But we'll see.
Out or something.
Yeah.
Miles Jury actually headlines Fox Sports 1 card.
Yeah, the return of Jury. Mike De La Torre. Should be fun. I mean, this is a good card. It's not like nothing on here jumps out at me. Your boy Patrick Cummins is on here.
Oh my god! Definitely gotta watch him
against Jan Blachowicz, which you know.
I'm
we'll
never
picking
Cummins again ever.
That was your guy early in the podcast. That was your guy. I told you get murdered, but it is what it is.
Yeah, you know, you hit some, you miss some.
So look, let's because honestly, I don't think people even care what we predict on the other card. Let's talk straight. Let's go straight into the co-main event with Gegard and Chris Weidman. Okay, and I want to start it with this. I think we are reading way too much into Chris Weidman's losses and far, far too much into Gegard Mousasi's wins because their resumes aren't even close.
I mean, but one was a champion. So what do you? I mean, when you're a champion, of course you're going to face the best in the world. That's how it works for champions.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you look at those fights, we'll talk about Romero first. Before he got knocked out, the fight was competitive. It wasn't like Weidman was getting dragged. He got caught with a flying knee by a guy who hasn't lost.
Yeah.
Okay, shit happens. Luke Rockhold, who's been anointed by most as the most complete fighter in the middleweight division and the heir to Anderson Silva's thrones when he was in Strikeforce, and he's beaten Jacare. So, and that fight was competitive until Luke Rockhold basically took him down and destroyed him. What I think it was the third round of that fight.
Fourth.
So
it should have ended fourth, in the okay. third. But
yeah, you're right. He destroyed him in the third, finished him in the fourth.
Yeah.
So, but it was two fights that were relatively competitive. Before that, you know, Weidman destroyed Vitor Belfort. He had a tough fight with Lyoto Machida. The Anderson Silva wins. Then we flip over to Gegard Mousasi, and everybody's like, Gegard's so hot right now, like Handel from fucking Zoolander, but. He lost to Uriah Hall, which everybody seems to completely forget.
Well, he just washed Uriah Hall too, though.
But yeah, but who is Uriah Hall? Like, who's Uriah Hall beat? He washed Vitor Belfort, who's basically been through everybody's rinse cycle the past year and a half. Then there was Thiago Santos, who, and who was it? Talos Leites, who fought Anderson Silva many, many years ago and has never been the same. That's Gegard's recent resume.
Yeah, 2015, knocks out Dan Hendo. But that was before old man resurgent Hendo.
Yeah, so it's like...
And then he lost to Jacare and Lyoto.
So we look at it as, like, Weidman is the underdog at a lot of sports books. I think that is fucking bizarre. Because I think if Weidman gets this fight to the ground, he's going to have a very strong chance of beating Gegard Mousasi. Mousasi's been good. But he's been beaten by the likes of guys like King Mo. I mean, he's not having a Robbie Lawler resurgence. I don't see that. Maybe I'm completely miscalculating how good the Dutch kickboxer is and the former Dream and Strikeforce champion is. But I just don't see how he's the favorite against a guy like Weidman, who is also going to be much bigger than – well, I don't want to say much bigger.
I mean, Mousasi's fought big dudes before. He fought dudes currently in the 205.
I mean, the dude's fought everybody. This fight, I'm picking Chris Weidman, and I don't have any qualms if Gegard wins, but I just don't see how people think that Weidman's such an underdog in this fight.
I don't think he's that overmatched. Mousasi has just hit his stride. And sometimes in MMA, you hit your stride.
So here's my question.
I'm picking him to win.
If Chris Weidman fought the same guys that Gegard Mousasi fought, you think he'd watch them too?
Yeah, because he's watched half of them already.
that's what I'm saying. It's like we're putting so much stock into Weidman. He needs this win. Yes.
But confidence and momentum is real.
It is real, and we don't know how it affects you mentally. And that is all very true. I'm just saying, like, this catching fight, like, dude, he's beaten guys he's supposed to beat. And he's lost to Uriah Hall. Who loses to Uriah Hall? Like, he lost. He got caught with a spinning back kick in the face.
You got knee in the face, by the way.
I'm going with Weidman. I have to say it because I've done a lot of interviews and people have asked me about, you know, Gegard being on this role, being this mouthpiece. And I'm just like, dude, y'all are really just counting on Chris Weidman like he's a nobody. I don't see it. I think Weidman's going to win this fight. But, you know, we'll see.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's going to be close. And it might be wrong to count out Chris Weidman. Maybe he just honestly lost to, two of the top three guys in the world?
Yeah, in the division for sure.
And definitely two guys better than the champion if you ask me. So what am I going to say to that? Just bad luck. And he was in both fights, like you said, for a while. He had a chance to win the last fight before the knee. If he lands that takedown and he doesn't get knee to the face KO, I know it's a lot of ifs, but he gets that takedown, fight over. He wins that round. And it was 1-1. And he's Romero looking for Bisping.
Yeah, Romero just blew his face up. But you're picking Mousasi, so you're cool with that.
I am. I'm picking him. I'll go unanimous decision. Split wouldn't surprise me either. Main event, DC versus Rumble 2. In the first one, I picked DC. I picked DC against John Jones in his first fight. DC is the ultimate grinder. To me, he's the second best fighter in the UFC. Damn, he's the second best light heavyweight of all time. All time, already. He's only lost to the best man to ever grace an octagon. And everyone else he's defeated. Heavyweight and light heavyweight. So, it's tough. But you know what? It's time for Rumble. Power's going to win out. Rumble's going to knock him out. And DC at 39 is going to reevaluate himself. He might fight again. He might not. I don't know. I think he might be comfy just being an analyst.
This is a really, really – there's only two outcomes. Is Rumble knocks him out early or Rumble loses. That's really it. There's no Rumble losing by decision. I mean going to decision. Winning by decision. That's not happening. There's no Rumble with a fourth-round knockout. Because Rumble, if you look at his record, he never knocks anybody out late. It's always quick. Because once you get a taste of that power, either you survive and beat him or you die. So it's just one of two things. Cormier, the last fight, he survived. So we got to wonder, not much has changed. I mean, people are looking at this fight like, you know, DC's older. But he's the same guy. So is Rumble. He's the same guy. All the people talk about all these changes that Rumble has had in camp. He hasn't actually done any of these things that he's talked about. How can he? He's knocking guys out in like 5 minutes, in less than 5 minutes. Gustafson mauled. Glover Teixeira got beat down in a heartbeat. It's like nothing has changed. So really all Cormier has to do is weather whatever the storm is to win this fight.
Make it out the first round.
That's it. Nobody believes in Anthony Johnson's cardio. Anthony Johnson doesn't believe in Anthony Johnson's cardio. Like, he doesn't waste any time. I don't think this is going the distance. No matter what happens, even if Rumble gasses, Cormier will finish him. Because Rumble, he has a hard time with guys on the ground. You go all the way back to the Josh Koscheck fight when he's fighting at welterweight, which is so fucking hard to believe. But he doesn't win decisions. And Cormier, I don't think he's going to give Anthony a lot of chances to get to his feet, because he knows the sooner he ends this match, the better, because at any time, Rumble can knock you out. He's probably the best one-shot kill artist in MMA. So that being said, I have a hard time picking against Cormier, and I picked against him last time. But
I'm flip-flopping.
I've been going back and forth all week. I'm gonna pick DC for the simple fact that I think he can avoid that onslaught, and I think he's smart enough to get away from those punches and kicks and take him down. But dude, all it takes is one. All it really takes is one from
Biggest
Rumble.
Hands I've ever seen on someone. I shook Bigfoot Silva's hand once, and I was like, damn, that's a big ass paw that guy has. And then I met Rumble, and I was like, nah, this is a hand. Like, yo, his knuckles have knuckles.
Son, he fought as a welterweight. I don't know how many times, like, and if you hadn't, like, I covered his fights where he fought as a welterweight and interviewed him, and I was like, how does this man make? How do you make this weight? Like, this is impossible. Because I would see him after fights, and he'd be like 220 pounds. Like, he's dying in there. So he's where he's supposed to be. But I don't know. I'm picking Cormier to win, but I want DC to win. I mean, I want Rumble to win because I want Rumble to fight John Jones.
I think That's he knocks how, out John Jones.
it's very possible. Like, John, I think John has a much harder time with Rumble than anybody else. And strictly because John does get hit. And I think he will get hit in that fight. So we'll see. But I'm gonna pick DC because it's hard to pick against a guy who has only lost to John Jones.
Yes, and if we get a flash knockout by Rumble, that means we probably get the John Jones fight at UFC 213, fresh off the suspension.
Very possible. Very, very possible.
If this shit goes five rounds, DC is not going to be rehabbed in time to take that fight.
No.
Which would be super whack. So, Rumble, it's all on you, guy. Let's go. Let's make it happen. Let's get the fresh matchup. Bring it to Vegas so we can have Shake Shack and enjoy a good KO. Other things to talk about in MMA, though. We have just two other things to touch on before we go to break. One is GSP making it to UFC 213. Are we seeing him in Vegas?
I don't know, man. I mean, as time progresses, I need to find somebody over at Asada and see if he's, you know, entered protocol and is doing everything he's supposed to do. I'm sure that news is out there. I just haven't been paying enough attention. I don't see how he does it. I mean, it's not like you need more time.
He's been gone nothing but time.
Yeah, like you've done nothing else, right? Like, what else do you need to do? You need another month? Dude, it's International Fight Week. It's the biggest card for the UFC. In terms of something that comes every single year. And they want to headline it with a big fight. They've already added Robbie Lawler and Cowboy Cerrone, which is going to be ridiculous. So you got to cap it off with this fight. I just don't see what else needs to happen. So I don't know, man. If GSP backs out, just, dude, cut him. Let him go. Go to Bellator or something.
They put Mr. Rousey on the card today, too, to get knocked
out.
Yeah,
I saw Travis Brown. The reports have come in. I don't care.
Yeah, like, man, he's just not going to have babies, okay? Just right. Walk away, my man. She's made enough. Put a ring on it, take half when she divorces you. That's quality advice right there. Something he doesn't get from his trainer.
It's true.
The last thing to touch on, King Mo.
Oh, yeah.
This guy had one hell of a weekend.
Yeah, he went but fought Fat Rampage, beat Fat Rampage, hopped on a flight, was hanging out at WrestleMania weekend. Didn't even go to WrestleMania, went to all the indie shows.
Killing it on the indie circuit. King Mo has a future in indie wrestling. I will go that far. Like, 4 years from now, K King Mo's not fighting anymore.
No, he's not. I don't think he's wrestling. And I just know that because I know him. And he's talked about how difficult it is to learn wrestling. Like, he wants to, because if people remember, he signed that deal with TNA years ago. Really? When he signed with Bellator, and he was supposed to wrestle. I think Tito Ortiz was supposed to do the same thing. It's a very difficult transition. He gives a lot of props to Matt Riddle, because Matt Riddle has made that transition very successfully. But for him, I don't know.
At a guy like Lashley.
Yeah, Lashley's been
the same. Does both at the same damn time.
Yeah, but he fights bums. You know, it's not like he's fighting elite.
You can fight anyone. I don't care. You don't fight the guy at the Walmart down the block. It ain't easy.
No,
in an easy fight?
I'm sure. I mean, no. But yeah, exactly. Daniel Cormier says he's been in an easy fight against Anderson Silva. Whatever that means.
He almost got his face kicked off twice, trying to give the fans what they want.
Yeah,
that shit wasn't easy.
No, it wasn't.
He made it very difficult.
But yeah, King Mo, I mean, you know, he went to the ROH show, which we'll talk about. Watching the Young Bucks and the Hardys. Hardy's not the last indie match. Apparently, they're having more indie matches, which is cool. But, yeah, I mean, the guy just lived it up, man. I mean, to plan to be in a fight, right, and to say, he's not going to hurt me, I'm going to go hang out this weekend. Like, it's when people – it's like the same thing when people say – when they promote – because this happens in Vegas all the time. I'm sure it happens in other cities. After the fight, you see, oh, Conor McGregor is going to be hosting the nightclub. Well, what if he gets the fuck beat out of him? They don't show up then. King Mo, he has flight arrangements. He told me, he was like, yo, I'm getting on a flight and I'm going to be at WrestleMania weekend. And he kicked it, unmarked. He did what he had to do.
I was wondering. I was like, yo, King Mo's wrestling a lot in this last round. He was like, nah, I got a flight after this. I can't be messing up my face. We're not standing and trading right now. I got wrestling to see. all right, so let's take a break. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We have boxing talk for our middle segment. And like we said, everything pro wrestling in the last segment. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Listen up. Because we need help putting out the show that you love for free every week, giving it free to the people, now we know nobody likes filling out surveys, but we really need you to do it. It won't take you more than 5 minutes, and besides helping out the show, you'll be entered for a chance to win a $100 iTunes gift card. You know what I can do with $100 on iTunes? I'm living life large on iTunes with that, and you guys get that just for helping us out. We know some of you may have already done surveys like this in the past, but we really need you to log in and fill this thing out as accurately as possible.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, once we know more about you, we'll be able to deliver the show and the sponsors you dream about. Finding sponsors who are a good fit means we get to give you the deals and information, the brands you care about, while keeping this show free to enjoy every week. Free to enjoy every week. It means you don't have to pay to subscribe for nothing. All right. And if you don't care about helping us and making the show better, do it for the chance to win a free iTunes or Amazon.com gift card. Right. You know, like, do it for free. Do it for the gifts. And if there's not, you know, just think about it. If there's not that many of you doing it, there's a better chance to win. So please, do us this solid and go to thecornersurvey.com. Once again, that's thecornersurvey.com. Do that. Keep the lights on for us. Let us cater to what you need. You know, you can tell us what you like and what you don't like, and then we can keep it all funky and knock this thing out.
I know the Corner Club got our back. You guys are going to fill out that survey. We're going to get more ads. We're going to be bringing you this for free for a long, long time. So shout out to y'all.
What's up, everybody? We are back. Once again, thanks for taking that survey. It means a lot to us. We have to talk boxing. We were both just at the gym with Sean Porter and his dad, Kenny, friends of the podcast, watching him train. Look good. Look sharp. Looks like he's ready for Berto.
Yeah, I mean, of course. He's going to beat the shit out of Berto. Sorry, Berto, if you have people listening. I don't care. You're not going to win this fight. Sean Porter, he's a tough out, man. He's lost two fights that a lot of people think he didn't lose. Kell Brook and Keith Thurman. So, yeah, this is a showcase for Sean Porter. He needs to look good. I asked Kenny if you'd be satisfied without a knockout, and he kind of beat around the bush, but they know they have to get Berto out of there. If they want any chance of fighting Keith Thurman again, they're going to have to get Berto out of there. They have to force people to want to see that fight. And you're not doing that if you win a decision against Andre Berto.
Nah, it's the statement fight. And I expect him to go out there and make the statement. Berto is just, at this point, I don't know what he's doing in his career. He's a name. He's a name on the resume, right?
He's been through a lot, man. I mean, you know, he had the shoulder surgery. I've never, ever thought Andre Berto was that good. He's always been a miniature version of Jeff Lacy. For boxing fans who remember Jeff Lacy before he ran to Joe Calzaghe, who beat the shit out of him. He does one thing very well, which is come forward and throw hands. He doesn't fight very well backwards. He's not a very good defensive fighter. He tried to implement his shoulder roll, and I can't remember what fight it was. It might have been Victor Ortiz, and he got dragged for it. So he's a decent fighter. And when he's on the offensive, he's good. But I remember you fought Collazo several years back, and I picked Collazo to win. And I was at Royce of 5'9's manager's house, who both of them are big boxing fans.
Kino?
Kino. I've known Kino for years. I mean, I used to go when I lived in New York. I used to go over to Kino's house to watch fights, and we just talked. And I remember going over there, and he was like, "Who you picking?" And I was like, "Collazo." He was like, "Over Berto?" I was like, "Yeah." Now this is when Collazo was during a rough patch in his career, but I was like, "Dude, Berto's not good." Berto ended up winning that fight, but he didn't look good winning that fight, right? So, yeah, Sean Porter should maul him. That's what it's supposed to be. You put the name on your resume, you get back into the thick of things at 147, which is pretty top heavy. Because Errol Spence is also fighting Kell Brook in a couple weeks. So you got to get your name in the mix, man. You can't be out here looking like, oh, well, he just got by Andre Berto. You got to beat the shit out of him. That's your goal.
Yeah, I mean, you got to work your way up somewhere. If not, you know, he's stuck with just no title and having to face like a Danny Garcia or something. Which isn't a horrible. Yeah, I mean, it's not a horrible option. I'm just saying, like, it's not prime time chasing a belt like against Keith Thurman. So. He doesn't want a lateral step. It's time to take forward steps. What else do we have this weekend? We have Lomachenko versus Sosa.
Well, this is going to be ugly, people. If you want to watch a showcase, go ahead and watch Lomachenko versus Sosa and watch Lomachenko beat the brakes off of Sosa.
Put the chalk outline up.
Yeah, like Lomachenko is in a position now where he's so good that he can't take fights like this. He just can't. He needs to fight the best of the best. Too good.
Yeah, but he has to stay active, too. If they don't want to fight him. So
he does, but it's just
Triple
G
was like this 2 years ago. You'd be like, yo, he's fighting in Morocco?
He wants to stay busy.
Yeah, it's like, let me just knock someone out.
It's just with Loma, it's like Sosa's a guy. At least like with Triple G was fighting guys to get belts. Like Loma needs to do the same. So but this will be ugly. The only other thing we really have to not even really to talk about is Manny Pacquiao signed his fight with Jeff Horn. So like what does that mean for everybody else? Does anybody care?
No. I mean it's gonna be in Australia, I'm assuming.
Yes, it's in Australia. It's in Manny Pacquiao's farewell tour.
Yeah. No, I don't care about that. They're going to have to fight at like 8 a.m. for us to watch it. I'm good.
Well, they'll time it with American television. And Pacquiao's side wants to make sure it's on free television. I have no idea how they go about pulling that off. So, I mean, I don't care about Jeff Horn. I don't care about this fight. I don't care about Manny Pacquiao. But those who do, just keep your eyes peeled because there's going to be an announcement about television perhaps. Because if it's on pay-per-view, it might as well be like $20. Nobody cares about this fight.
Yeah, I'm definitely not paying for that. We had another announcement, Ward versus Kovalev.
Ah, yes, the rematch.
The rematch here at the Mandalay Bay, which really upset me because that means we don't get food vouchers.
We probably get the Mayweather special, which is...
No, I feel like Mandalay Bay always comes through with like the hot dog hamburger platter.
Or the pot. I mean, look, people are like, what are y'all talking about?
Yo, media food is real.
Yeah. So media, once you're in Vegas, you get in this cycle where you know what's being served depending on who's fighting. The thing about the T-Mobile Arena, which is fantastic, is there's no like kitchen or anything. So you get ticket vouchers and you get to eat what's in the arena. And we get $30 worth of Shake Shack.
And every time. Like, free 99.
Yeah, people say, well, how do you spend $30 at Shake Shack? Look, it's an arena. If you've been to like a football game, you know the shit is expensive. But we find ways. We're very creative with our vouchers, and we find ways to get everything that we want.
By the way, if you ever get vouchers, always bring like $5 in singles with you.
Yeah.
So you don't have to double up and buy $30 worth of stuff in one trip. Because you'll end up wanting like $17 worth of something and spending two vouchers, and you just be whacked for the whole night. When you can just bring two extra, bring two extra dollars. You get the shake, the fries, and the burger.
Okay, so we've gone off
subject. Listen, media food is a real ass subject. We got to school people. You never know, people might be listening to podcasts with aspirations to do what we do for a living.
Well, y'all let us know if you care, and we'll talk about more of the ins and outs of being covering media fights, because I don't know if you guys really give a shit that much. But if you do, we'll talk about it more.
More Kovalev, though, the matchup, I mean, it's going to play out like the first fight to me. It's Kovalev was bigger and stronger, had the fast start, and Ward is smaller, quicker, and has the endurance. So it's now just a matter of when does Kovalev gas?
I don't see it that way. And this is why. I think Ward figured out Kovalev, so I don't think it's going to start the same
way. See, I thought it was the fatigue. I didn't think he figured him out. I think he just wore him out. And the body punches and the holding, he leaned on a bigger guy.
No, I mean, if you look at the slight adjustments that he did make, and you watch his foot. Like, I watched the fight, like, twice. And I watched little things that Ward did. Like, he does little things like Floyd Mayweather does to take away and make sure that he doesn't find himself in positions where he's going to get caught. I think that'll happen again in this fight. It's really going to be up to Kovalev to do something different, because Ward basically saw everything that Kovalev had. Not to say that Kovalev's seen everything Ward has, or Ward even put it all out there. But when you're as an offensive fighter as Kovalev is, and he's a very good boxer, but he's known as a slugger, a boxer puncher, there's not too many dynamics to your game. So what can you do different? How can you set up the right hand differently? Like, how can you go to the body? I don't know if Kovalev can make those adjustments. I'm pretty confident that Andre Ward can. And I pick an Andre Ward to win the rematch. And I picked Kovalev to win the first fight. And I thought it was a draw, which I thought people who said it was a robbery, that was ridiculous. It wasn't a robbery. It was a close fight. But I don't see it playing out the same way. I think Ward comes in and tries to figure out what Kovalev has early. I don't think Kovalev drops Ward in the rematch either. I think Ward is smarter than that.
I don't think he drops him, but I think he beats him. I think he outpoints him. And then I'm here for the trilogy.
How's it going to be a trilogy? If Ward's up 2-0.
No, Ward's not going to win.
Kovalev. Oh, you're thinking Kovalev.
Kovalev to outpoint him. Yeah. Okay. Technically, Kovalev won the first fight. I saw it with my two eyes. My eyes don't lie to me. It is what it is. Kovalev won the first fight. He got robbed. It's time for him to get that back. The Mandalay should be easier to pack. We'll see if, you know, this brings out more fans, because the last one we did have heavy criticisms because it was underpromoted. People barely knew. And then it was a good fight when it came on, and people were like, oh, look how dope that is. It's like, yeah, but you guys didn't know it was on until like 3 hours ago.
Yeah, they'll have to do a lot. They'll have to do something different with the promoting. And I still, for the life of me, can't figure out why Jay-Z's not more involved in the marketing in some way. Like, you, Beyonce, put him in a video. Put Andre Ward in a music video. Do something.
Take him to Hot 97. Do something. Just walk him in the door.
He's just got to be, you know, more visible. Because, again, I've said it a million times about Ward. He's a great fighter, but nobody cares about him because they don't see him enough. Yo,
Triple G is on the Breakfast Club. Andre Ward can't get in the building.
And, dude, and I know Charlamagne would love to have Ward, because Charlamagne's a big boxing fan, and he'd love to talk to Andre Ward. I'm not sure if that's ever happened. I have a feeling it has happened. But for this fight, you have to go that route. Andre Ward is essentially the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world right now.
Yeah.
And so he's got to be more visible. He speaks English. Like, come on.
Yeah. Very true. We can't get off of this subject without mentioning your favorite fight of the year. You have your fingers and toes crossed to see this fight. McGregor versus Mayweather. Conor started training. Can you feel it in the air?
No.
Can you feel the icy breath of this fight breathing on your neck?
No. Look, dude, people got up in arms because there was a hold date for, what was that?
June 10th?
For June 10th. And I told everybody, these holds are arbitrary. They happen all the time. Mayweather Pacquiao had a billion dates held. It means nothing. Mayweather's a promoter. All he can say is, hey, Nevada State Athletic Commission, I'm putting in a bid. I want to hold this arena. And they go, for what? For a fight. And they go, okay. And then they announce. Then if you go to the commission meetings, they tell you there's a potential hold on such and such a date by Mayweather Promotions. And people are like, oh, that's Mayweather McGregor. No, it wasn't. It was just something to keep you guys talking. If you haven't paid attention, Mayweather's just going to keep this shit going, because he has to. If the fight does come to fruition, it's because Mayweather has forced the hand of everybody involved to make sure this fight happens. But it costs him nothing to stay busy by booking arenas, setting up dates, sending contracts, making phone calls claiming he's offered $30 million. Like, he'll do all of these things. But like I said, that was arbitrary. As soon as Kovalev War got booked, because I knew it was getting booked, I said it. That fight's not going to happen. You need at least a three-month tour to promote this fight. They got to do a big-ass media tour. They're not doing that shit in 2 months. Plus training. Mayweather's not even in the – I mean, I'm sure he's training, quote-unquote. I'm sure because he stays in shape. But he's not doing anything. This fight's not happening in this summer. Y'all shut the fuck up and chill out.
Well, aren't you just Mr. Positivity?
I'm just being honest, man. Like, these things don't happen quickly. And this is something that could drag out for, unfortunately, another year. They'd be smart if they find a way to do it before the end of the year. But there's just a lot going on to make this fight happen.
And I would like to point out that you have come a long way. Because, you know, just a couple months ago, you said this shit was never happening.
No. I mean, I'm still like 70-30. Like, there's only 30% of me that believes it can happen. The reason why is there is legitimate public interest, and it's a dumbass fight, and it's an easy way for Floyd to make money. And the main reason why I think this fight will happen, and not even I don't think it'll happen, the main reason why the 30%, it came from 0%, is because WME IMG is hurting, and the UFC needs something to jumpstart them. There's no interest in UFC 210. There's no interest in UFC 212. 211, Dallas should be pretty interesting. But there's no real genuine mainstream interest in the UFC without Conor McGregor or Ronda Rousey fighting. And that's just fact.
So you got two stars and that's it.
And it's like they bought a lemon. The Fertittas sold them the farm, and then Ronda got dragged, and then Conor was like, I'm going to box. So you're put in a position where you need to bring interest to your sport. So maybe then you do take the step aside money and let Showtime and Mayweather Promotions and Al Heyman produce this thing. You get your cut and you move out. And then you wait to see what happens, because if McGregor stays on his feet for 12 rounds, he wins. So it's like, nah, he doesn't win the fight.
I was going to say figuratively.
Yeah, figured, not literally.
He's not getting knocked out, though. Floyd's not going to knock him out. He's not going to engage.
We'll see. So I've come a long way. It's very possible.
Conor lands the punch.
He won't.
I mean, okay, you can't. I was just seeing if you were going to finally give it.
It just, dude, how can you can't embarrass somebody by saying, dude, you fought the best fighters in your world. You've been one of the best fighters in the world for a minimum of 10 years, a maximum of 20 years you've been in this sport. No professional athlete has been on top of their game longer than Floyd Mayweather has. You mean to tell me a dude from another sport's going to beat him? Come on, man. It's not going to happen. Just don't work like that.
I don't know what to tell you, man. We have these conversations all the time. Like, can Alabama football beat the Cleveland Browns? It's like, no. And Floyd Mayweather, for all purposes, is like the New England Patriots. So, yeah, it's odd to think about, but there's always a chance. That's what I'm... One day you're going to say that. There's always a chance. And if McGregor wins, you're going to lose your damn mind.
It won't happen. But, yeah. Have fun. I mean, you guys have, like, dude, Randy Couture, James Toney, people are like, James Toney is a puncher's chance. Not against Randy Couture, but you guys bought into that shit. I don't buy into shit like that. I just look at the fight for what it is. It's a boxing match, something that Conor McGregor has never really done. Like, he's not, dude, come on. Just cut it out.
Well, we're going to go to break. It's time to talk wrestling. So right after this last word from the sponsors, we're going to be back. We got WrestleMania to recap, some Mania weekend, indie shows, NXT, the Raw after Mania, SmackDown after Mania, NXT weekly again. So much wrestling. My mind's on overload. So quick break. We'll be right back to talk all of that with you guys.
All right, everybody. Before we continue to talk more combat sports, we got to give another thanks to Casper Mattresses. Casper Mattresses combine two technologies, springing latex foam and supportive memory foam, to create an award-winning sleep surface. Have y'all ever slept on memory foam? It's like floating on air. It's that great. And this is how we get our sleep. So you guys make sure that you check it out. Casper mattresses are made in the USA and have free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. Shout out to the Great North. You can buy your Casper mattress easy online, and it's completely risk-free.
Look, dude, you spend like a third of your life sleeping, and Casper understands the importance of trying out a mattress before you commit. Look, so if you aren't satisfied with the Casper mattress, you got a 100-day period. Yeah, that's right, 100 days. You know, like 100 days of sleeping, by about that time, I think I know if I like my mattress. So get a Casper mattress for $500 for a twin or $950 for a king size. And you can save an additional $50 towards your Casper mattress by going to casper.com/thecorner and entering the promo code thecorner. That's casper.com/thecorner. Promo code thecorner to save $50 towards your Casper purchase. Terms and conditions apply. Look, again, man, I like to sleep, and these things are for real.
What up, everybody? Welcome back. Thank you guys for listening to sponsors. You guys need a mattress. You guys know where to go. I might need a new mattress after this conversation because I'm going to be tired because we're talking so much wrestling that I don't even know where to start. I mean, I feel like we got to go in chronological order all the way through, right?
Yeah.
So ROH, we'll do ROH first. Bucks versus Hardys, ladder match. Did you like it? Did you not like it? I watched it live.
Oh, I thought it was amazing. I don't think it was the best ladder match. I still think Ladder War from the, I think it was Final Battle pay-per-view is better. But I thought it was an amazing match.
Is that where Daniels damn near lost his life?
Yeah, everybody died in that match. That match was ridiculous. Ladder War was ridiculous.
That was so much blood.
Yeah, but this was damn good. This was a really good match. And I mean, watching it in retrospect, because I didn't watch it till, when did I watch it? I watched it that morning. You can kind of tell that I watched it after WrestleMania. So after watching it, you were like, oh, yeah, they're going to WWE after this. But dude, it was exactly what people wanted. They filled up that place with so many people to see that tag team match. Yeah, man, it delivered. It definitely delivered.
Yeah, the ROH card as a whole, I was kind of like, ah, it's a little lackluster. The Jay Lethal match was okay.
I liked the Lethal match. I thought him and Cody did more than I expected in a Bull Rope match.
There were some good spots. You know, holding the rope isn't easy, by the way. Carrying that damn rope around and doing actual spots. The Lethal Injection was cool. They just don't have chemistry yet, really.
I mean, they're solid. I think Cody is really adapted to the indie style. I think he's looked pretty good. I mean, obviously, you guys, if you know me, Marty Scurll versus Adam Cole was – I love that match.
Oh, it's a good match.
Aside from Cole botching the Tombstone twice. But we had a
– That was like a theme for the weekend. Yeah.
Running theme. But I thought, like, Scurll looked excellent in that match, and, you know, he picked up the victory. But then it leaves you wondering, is Adam Cole heading – to the big time now? His Twitter might lead you to think that. I don't think so. I think there's still a lot of work for him to do in the indie scene. I think it's a tease. But maybe. Maybe we've seen the last Adam Cole as an independent wrestler.
Yeah. You know what? I think he's ready for NXT. NXT could use, you know, new guys. We will talk about that, the people moving up. So there's nothing but opportunity in NXT right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity. It's a lot of opportunity to make a splash. But I thought the ROH card was good. The Dalton Castle Christopher Daniels match I didn't care for. It was very slow paced. You knew there was no way in hell Dalton Castle was going to win. So there was really no intrigue in that match.
I wanted to believe he was going to win.
Yeah, but there was no way.
No.
There's no way happening. All right, so that's the indie scene real quick. I mean, there was some Evolve cards that I'm actually still watching. Keith Lee was a star on the indie scene this weekend, had some amazing matches.
Ricochet killed everything.
Yeah, that was a great match. But let's talk about NXT TakeOver. A card that we came into with not a lot of hype. It was probably the least hype TakeOver. Definitely the least hype WrestleMania TakeOver, but the least hype TakeOver we probably had.
But it delivered.
Yeah, kind of delivered.
I thought it was a good card. I'm not sure what you were expecting. The new belts. New belts are kind of dope. I feel like this is a response to Paige just defacing the old women's championship.
Wow.
They're just like, we got to get this shit out of here.
Yeah, I didn't even put that together. Possible? Doubtful. I don't know.
I'm just saying. No, obviously you had to design and order belts well before leaked sex tape, but it couldn't have been better timing. Like when you just see Paige just tucking the old women's championship under her chin.
Yeah.
All bad for that belt. And there was a picture of Asuka licking it at some point. Just, you know, mutually exclusive pictures, but it's like, oh, forever unclean. It's all bad for that one. The new belts are dope. They all kind of look the same. I guess it's giving them that edgy feel. They don't want any like colors to them or anything like that, which is cool. Good for the brand.
Yeah, belts were cool. Let's talk about the card. The first match, we had Sanity against the tag team with Ty Dillinger, Roderick Strong, Cassius Ohno, and Ruby Riott. I have several problems with this match. The addition of Ruby Riott and Nikki Cross was completely shouldn't have happened. They should have had their own match, in my personal opinion. Ruby Riott is a talented independent wrestler who's now come onto the scene, and she didn't really get to show anything. And her and Nikki Cross, who are both very competent wrestlers, were made to be more like a sideshow in this match. And I felt like it would have been much better if they could have stood on their own. And aside from that, I'm starting to get, you know, I didn't have a problem with Sanity at first, and a lot of people did. I'm starting to get Sanity fatigue because their matches just are kind of the same thing. And this one, it never really kicked into that high gear, and it's partially because the women were, like, interrupting things. Cassius Ohno looked great, but it's just
a lot of guys in the ring, man.
Yeah, but it's just for a takeover pay per view. It wasn't the hot start match that I wanted to see. Okay, it didn't set the pace. But it was okay.
Damo had his moments and he got the pin. You know, he looked strong. He was in the Battle Royal the next day. Looked strong there, so they're building him pretty well. I don't know what you do with him though, because to me he's Braun Strowman again.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, he got tossed in the Battle Royal the next night, but I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Like, similar characters. Unless you have a Strowman-like character, one on SmackDown, one on Raw. I mean, that could work. Yeah. Brand split helps.
I mean, Dillinger took the loss and then, you know, got the call, but I don't, like, this. Everybody that's in this match, I'm not sure where they're going. No Way Jose was pulled for Cassius Ohno. Yeah.
Roddy looked good, though. Roddy's looked good in his little spots.
Yeah, Roddy looks good. I just need to see him, more personality from Roddy.
Yeah.
As, you know, in his promos. Because he's a great wrestler. He's always been a really good wrestler. He's a better heel, though. So I don't know where they really go with him. So that match, I was just like, eh, all right. Well, it wasn't a hot start.
The next match, Aleister Black's entrance had me marking out so tough.
It was pretty tough entrance, man.
Just the rise from the casket. Just, got the little vest. The music is perfect. That shit's just dark. He does the flip into the like Indian style, just sit there and meditate. It's exactly what he did on the Indies, but they've taken it to another level.
Yeah, I mean, the Aleister Black character, who was Tommy Yen, the entrance was great. Match, not so much. I felt like this match was really disjointed. I felt like...
It was kind of strong. It was stiff. They worked some stiff spots.
It was stiff, but it felt like they were... Like, it just felt like it could have been better. And I don't blame either of them. I just felt like there was not a lot of chemistry between the two. And I feel like Aleister was trying to do a lot more than he should have. At some points, you can kind of see him waiting to pull off moves or what have you. But Cien, I didn't understand why they booked this match. Because Almas was on a pretty decent winning streak and having good matches. And then for him to lose to Aleister Black kind of resets him again.
Yeah, unless he starts complaining about losing. That has to be, like, the angle sooner or later.
I don't know what they do. I honestly don't know. But I thought this match was good. It didn't kick into a high gear for me. The finish was kind of abrupt. And a good match, but it felt like another good NXT match. It didn't feel like an NXT takeover match.
All right. I'll give you that. The match with Oney Lorcan was probably just as good for Siang.
Yeah,
if not a little better, so I'll give you that. Authors of Pain, DIY, The Revival, amazing tag match. I guess it kind of got ruined towards the end.
Yes.
With the elimination, but damn, it started off just on fire, where you're like, oh, this is great. Authors of Pain taking bumps that you don't see Monster Heels take. Everything about it was great. The teases, the tandem moves by DIY and The Revival doing each other's moves. That shit was booking, incredible.
Yeah, whoever the agent was on this match, whoever helped with the booking, it was very well booked until the elimination of DIY. This is the first time that I'm usually a big advocate for these elimination style matches because I like to see, you know, who's the last man standing. Not in this case. I would have preferred for the pinfall to win because of the way this match was playing out. The chemistry was so good between, and it's a testament to DIY and the Revival, and not a testament to Authors of Pain. I think we're stuck with Authors of Pain as champions.
They look good, though. I mean, until Heavy Machinery comes and takes it off.
Nah, they won't take it off. But I just feel like with Authors of Pain, it's you know, I'll talk about this the same way I'll talk about Bobby Roode. The work rate isn't there. They're like a good presence, in Bobby Roode's case, an excellent character. But as far as this NXT pace, they don't have it. And DIY and Revival carried that entire match. Like, they handled everything. They were like, we'll take it from here, boys. You just got to stand around, do some bumps, take some bumps. We'll figure it out at the end. As soon as they were eliminated, you could clearly see, like, all the momentum, the wind came out of the building. Because the match just wasn't the same anymore.
I mean, the Revival might be the best tag team on the planet right now. This second, not resume. This second, they are better than the Young Bucks.
In terms of, like, in-ring match chemistry.
Match quality right now, better than Young Bucks. And I love the spot fest.
Like, yeah, the psychology. You might be right, man. I mean, I'm not, like, dude.
Four for four at this point. You go back to the alpha ones at the pay-per-view.
Here's the thing about the Revival. There was a time where people were like, which one's Dash and which one's Wilder?
I still don't know.
But now you're just like, I can't even believe that was like a joke. Because everybody looked at them as like a really generic tag team. They're legit. And they're made men now.
Now they're top guys.
Yep.
Yeah, like they work themselves. And we'll get into this more, obviously, since we're going in order. But they went from fringe SmackDown tag team to Raw main event style tag team. And they worked for it. They worked their way onto the flagship show. This shit's crazy.
No, they're just that good. They're really that good of a tag team.
They are.
And DIY, they're very good as well. Gargano and Ciampa were just kind of thrown together because they were just two independent guys. On the independent scene, they worked together. But yeah, man, the future of the tag division, I'm like, I don't really know who challenges Author of Pain. It makes it fun. Like, these guys are fun. I don't know. I don't know.
Heavy Machinery is getting the push now.
So I don't see it.
I don't know if it lasts or what.
I don't see them lasting long. They'll be a fun, like, I feel like they're a heel tag team. As a babyface tag team, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, the babyface tag team was always supposed to be TM61, so the knee injury kind of set them back.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do something.
And they were going to repackage them, so this is good, I guess. They hit the reset button, they come back. Hopefully, as the Mighty Don't Kneel, instead of TM61, just give them their whole fucking name back. Give them, like, super dope characters and let them rock. Until then, yeah, I don't think they've signed any other tag teams. They have those two black kids who are like twins. But yeah. I don't see much from them. I mean, they're big-ass dudes, but I don't know what else you get.
No, man, like I said, the future NXT is kind of rough right now.
That'll be fine. I mean, you say that until they hold a fucking tag team tournament next December and they're stacked.
Yeah, but until then, dude, we got there's a lot of holes out there. Like, even, dude, NXT is not appointment viewing every week anymore. Like, I watch it, but I'm not like, oh, shit, I got to watch NXT. Like, I watch it because I'm like, oh, the network's on. NXT's on. I guess I'll watch it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's still really good wrestling. It's not what it was a year ago.
But I'm not sure it's not if nearly you get
that
it again.
It's very difficult to have that.
No, I mean, it was like
caliber of guys.
It was lightning in a bottle, but it's just, I guess we'll tease it now. Next week, we're going to do our own roster shakeup, but like minor league baseball, where some guys will get sent back to NXT. So you guys will get to listen to us and move guys around the way we feel like they should be moved around, you know, after SmackDown and Raw ruins whatever they're going to do. So let's move on. Asuka and Ember Moon.
This match to me was just okay. The one we saw live was much better than this one.
See, and I have a rationale for this. I think they're built because they have two baby faces going in this match. They've been trying to turn Asuka heel, but it's proven to be a lot more difficult because she doesn't talk much and she's such a badass in the ring that fans just kind of go, whatever. And you know, she starts going off in the ring and then you're like, she's a baby face. But they're trying to turn her heel. So they had to have her get a cheap win over Ember Moon, who hadn't been pinned before, to build towards the rematch because there's definitely going to be a rematch. And I know you've talked about this whole vacating the title thing. It's not happening.
Okay, so Ember's going to win the title, and then Asuka's going to be up for the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because Ember Moon, because she needs the rub. Beating Asuka right now, isn't necessarily the rub. It's still, it's like, especially in a match like this, I think they got to heat up to a better match. And now they have a legitimate feud because there was no heat going into this match. It was like, I want to wrestle you. You got the title. She's like, come and get it. And then they had a match. Now it was like, bitch, you beat me and you cheated. And Asuka's like, I have no competition. Now you have heat. If they start doing weekly stuff, now you got legitimate heat. There was just no heat. So the booking makes sense. The match quality wasn't quite there, but I think they're building towards something better. But on a show that I felt like every match could have been better, except for the DIY, for the triple threat tag team, this was, again, I felt like this. We needed a really good women's match, and we got an okay match.
Yeah, we got an okay. I mean, this, it felt like they're in that transition phase. They're in that, yo, I'm trying to get braids, but I used to have a Caesar. So now I got this weird ass mini fro.
Wow. Okay.
Type of stage of wrestling. Like, everyone has that weird, awkward hair phase. They, even my white brethren who listen to the podcast. Like, I have white friends who grow out their hair. That shit looks really weird where you kind of have a bowl cut slash mullet before it really grows long enough. It's in that stage. And they're just trying to get through it. You can't close your eyes to it. It's where getting rid of these guys and they're moving on and they've outgrown us. And then we just bought these guys in and we have to rock with what we have. And what they have is Asuka and Bobby Roode. And that's it. Everyone else is new.
Yeah, well, also Japan, I guess.
They're brand new. They started wrestling like 4 months ago.
Yeah, I guess you're right. So then we got the main event, Bobby Roode and Shinsuke Nakamura. And I'm wholeheartedly convinced that we have like two or three versions of Nakamura, and we haven't come close to the Nakamura that showed up against Sami Zayn. This match was underwhelming to me as well.
It's too much slow pace, too much psychology.
So there's two things that happened here. One, I've always said this since the beginning. It was the reason why I said that Roode shouldn't be champion. Now, I was wrong because Roode is champion, but he's a good worker, but he's like Diet Triple H to me. He's a great talker. He has a great look. He has a great gimmick. But his in-ring, unless he's being carried by a very, very good performer, is very robotic. Like Triple H is spine buster in the knee. Like he has a box in set of moves. And they're good. They're just not great. And when you're the champ of NXT, which is basically your work rate champion, like the IC title used to be in wrestling, you got to put on great matches. Bobby Roode's stealing nobody's show. On the other hand, Nakamura, he has this thing when he's not wrestling at G1, if you watch him in New Japan, where he goes in like cruise control. And he has matches, and they're never like terrible, but they're never like really good either. Like in this match, he like forgets to sell his neck for a long time. Like Bobby Roode's working his neck. And Nakamura's just like, I don't give a fuck. And he's just like, he's like shrugging it off. And he's like, I'm going to sell this knee instead. It's like, all right, dude, but I don't understand why we're doing this. The match itself, I mean, I was a little surprised that Roode won because, you know, I've been holding on to this thing that Nakamura shouldn't go up, which I was completely wrong about. But Roode won, and when he won, I was like, that's cool. Now what? Like, that was my immediate thought. Who does he face next? Who is the next guy in line to face Bobby Roode? They've established nobody. Is it Drew Galloway? Because now Drew Galloway signed NXT. That dude's a fucking giant. I forget how big he is.
Yo, it is. It's crazy, right?
But I just don't like this. I'm not saying the booking has necessarily been bad for NXT. I feel it just has a lot to be desired. And none of these programs, including Bobby Roode, Nakamura, it had terrible builds to take over. I don't know what they're doing with weekly television on NXT where they're not building these matches properly. We saw Nakamura face TJ Perkins, and then it was like a bunch of vignettes, and then he had a title match. This is really weird. I don't know.
This is the biggest build they have all year because this is the most time they have between pay-per-views.
Unless they throw another one in.
Even if they throw one in, what is it usually? The Japan card? In July, right? The July 4th?
Well, when was the London card last year? Wasn't that last year?
Yeah, but that was...
That was before SummerSlam.
No.
Yeah, because Bayley was on that card. And it was before SummerSlam, because after SummerSlam was the, I don't remember what it was. The Canada, I think?
I'm looking it up right now. December 16, 2015 was London. I knew it was December. Then you have Brooklyn. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm not sure if they had one. I don't think they have one during this long-ass break.
They got to figure out something because the weekly television just hasn't been good. It just has not been much.
But this is the build, right? This is what you build towards. You make it better. You have time. You always want to give people time. They have time.
I get that they have time, but time for what? Like, even the Fallout, the show after NXT TakeOver, the WrestleMania, like, this past NXT show was boring as hell. Like, it wasn't good. And it's like if you're going to build towards something, because I think pre-taping shows is becoming problematic because you spoil everything in advance. And then if you don't have people appear, he's got like four shows with no Bobby Roode or three shows without Asuka. You can't do that. They got to be on every week. It's an hour show. I get it. But I got to see these people. I got to be invested in something that I care about.
But that's not how it's always been. Now you're just trying to change what made them them.
No. There were legitimate builds towards these matches prior. Last year, Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn for the title, there was legit. You saw them or something about them every week. Nakamura Rude, they would just completely ignore for a week, or they just make a brief mention. Nakamura is working to get his knee back, but that's not building towards a match. Like, nothing in this takeover had a proper build. Nothing. And they had 3 months. You got nothing. There was no payoff. You weren't invested in any of these matches. Were you?
I wasn't. No, because they didn't build for a long enough time, and it seems like Royal Rumble was just right there.
But, like, if
they just continue everything over from that Rumble takeover.
Right, which didn't make any sense to me. Like, I felt like TakeOver should be the culmination of a lot of these feuds. And now it feels more like a continuation. Granted, Nakamura is now gone. And Asuka and Ember Moon, they're going to continue their feud. But the Revival's gone. And I don't know what they're doing with DIY. But Authors of Pain continue to be champs. Like, no title changed hands. It was essentially three heel champions. If you count Asuka, one. Which was really strange to me. And I don't know. This, to me, overall, this was just a lackluster pay-per-view. I wasn't like, man, I got to watch this again. I ain't watch this shit again. I'm cool. We can move on.
Well, let's give them time, man. See how everything builds out. I still have faith in NXT. And then we have Mania. Mania itself.
Yeah.
It started strong.
It started strong when the show started. Even the pre-show.
Well, I didn't mind Neville.
No. Neville and Aries was pretty good. It was a pretty good match. But that Baron Corbin Dean Ambrose match, trash.
Yo, they had a better match on SmackDown this week.
Yeah, which is bizarre.
Which is like no holds barred match. I was watching it, why do this? When you highlight how shitty the original one was at WrestleMania, and then you have him top it, like, it makes no sense.
And it wasn't for the title. Like, Corbin won it. I was like, he's not the champ? Like, what happened?
That's true. I didn't even notice that.
So that match was bad. The Memorial Battle Royal is now a gimmick and a joke. Like, it means nothing. Mojo Rawley's not getting, like, some major push. It was a gimmick to get Gronkowski involved.
That's it.
And the MVP of that match was a security guard who clearly didn't know who Gronk was and why he was climbing over the guardrail and was trying to stop him.
You know that Vince was in someone's ear like, get her the hell off of him.
Yeah, so the pre-show, like, we don't even spend much time on that. I mean, Aries losing, I was a little shocked by that. But again, I feel like Neville's been such an undervalued talent. Like, he's carrying 205 Live on his back.
And they're going to keep that feud going. It's a feud that deserved more than 3 weeks.
And keep the title on Neville. I'm totally fine with Neville being champion for like a year because he's so good. He's so good as a heel. Nobody else on that roster is ready to take that title off him. Nobody.
Aries is close. They can play hot potato with that belt for all I care.
I'm good.
And then we have Styles versus Shane O'Mac. Match of the night. God. 20 minutes. It was a good 20-minute match.
Yeah, and I know, like, there was people giving me shit on Twitter about this. Like, I'm like, dude, look, I don't care how good the match is. This is not the match that any of us wanted. And the match was solid because of AJ Styles. I'm convinced that AJ Styles can wrestle a grape and put over the grape.
I think so. He's the best in the world. Like, honest to God, he's the best in the world.
So this match, like, dude, if anybody's watched this match and thought that anything that Shane did was believable, you're an idiot. Like, his float over DDT was awkward.
Well, AJ triangle, sold everything, though.
Yeah, AJ sold to the moon.
Like, he made the punches not look that horrible.
Well, I mean, Shane's punches are terrible. But this was a good match because AJ carried this match. This was the best match on the card, which doesn't even say that much. But in a vacuum, it was a good match. But overall, it's like you can't convince me that Shane McMahon can hang with AJ Styles in any sense of a match that's not has a gimmick attached to it. It was weird booking because the referee got knocked down and AJ is the one who goes to get the trash can. Why? I didn't understand that. But I guess because this is more spectacle than for any use of logic, this is what we get. Match was good. It was very good for AJ, but the psychology of it all was completely lost on me. It just didn't make any sense why Shane was hanging in there for so long.
You made too much sense of it. Like, they weren't going to have a 10-minute match. No, that's not how AJ Styles rocks.
But that's what I'm saying. When it was booked, I was like, this isn't going to be a bad match, but come on, let's be honest. This is not the match that people wanted to see.
No.
AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens, AJ Styles versus anybody.
Joe versus Seth versus, come on, there's a whole roster of people we want to see AJ Styles face. And we got time. So hopefully they do that. And it seems like now SummerSlam is more of the big card where you can actually put real-ass wrestling on it.
I hope so. I hold my reservations. I'm not
and
too
we have
sure.
The shakeup, so we never know.
Right.
Styles goes to Raw. That opens a whole lot of possibilities.
Very strong possibility that happens, too. It just felt like everything he did on SmackDown was like, so long, SmackDown. It just felt that way.
Yeah, and then him versus Joe would be incredible.
Yeah, which we'll probably get to. So then we after we got off of that match, which had the crowd hot, we went to Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, which I thought was also a very good match.
Good match. Some people,
I agree with a lot of people that it was like, it could have been better. Of course it could have been better.
But how much time? Like, if they had five more minutes, it probably would have been better.
But my rationale stands from the last 2 weeks. If it was for the Universal title, of course it would have been better. You had all the time in the world. You could have done what you wanted. But they were kind of restricted because this card had so many things on it and it wasn't a major title. So we got what we got. And Kevin Owens, the one finger on the rope, brilliant.
That was
Kevin
great. Owens, great spot.
Dude, there's nobody who does in-ring commentary on their own matches better than Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens. The things that he says in his matches, like, he's great. But this was really good, and I don't know where this leads. Could Kevin Owens be coming to SmackDown? I don't know. But it was a good match, you know. But it seems like it was a good match that's going to lead to a bigger, with higher stakes match. Something a little bit more violent should be coming down the line. But we'll see.
Yeah, and then we go from that into the women's match. Bayley versus Charlotte versus Sasha versus Nia.
What an underwhelming match.
Underwhelming. They didn't have enough time. It was rushed, especially for an elimination match.
Dude, all right. The main problem with this match is it didn't matter. Like, if Bayley wasn't champ, Charlotte still had a pay-per-view streak intact. Nia was the hot new kid on the block looking to get the title. And Sasha was wavering between babyface and heel, trying to find a way to manipulate her way back into the title, being the champion again, then I would have been more emotionally invested in this match. But as it stood with Bayley as the champion, Nia getting eliminated first after having a pretty strong showing, Charlotte having really nothing on the line because her pay-per-view streak got broken, a nonsensical pay-per-view, this was dumb. Like, and then the match, it was like, all right, cool, whatever. It happened. It was clearly one of the worst title matches that they've had in like the last year, which says a lot about that women's division because they've been pretty good at putting on great matches. This, not so much.
Yeah, they've had better matches on Raw.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not sure how I feel about that. To me, it was underwhelming.
Very underwhelming. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, so that's something. Hopefully they get that fixed. Let them have their own feuds. I understand you want to cram everyone in for WrestleMania, but it didn't work with these four.
No, it didn't. I felt like it would have been better if it was like a ladder match or something, but we just weren't emotionally invested. Then we go into the next match, which clearly everybody was mostly invested in. The ladder match. Here's my question.
We were wondering why a ladder was randomly
exactly
just introduced into the feud like a week before. Like, yo, you guys just throwing a random fucking ladder in this match? We got our answer.
the return of the Hardy Boys.
I hate that they're called the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, they were more. It was like the Hardy Boys with a sprinkle of the broken. Like it was like there was like a little bit of broken,
a dash of broken. In which yeah. Matt Hardy is still a fucking genius because on Twitter he was like, the energy of the crowd subsided my plague for a second, and it's just like like he's still alluding like, no, I'm still broken. Like
yeah, so clearly that was the biggest pop of the night, the Hardys coming back. And the entire, all those people yelling delete, which should be in like on Raw, fuck that owl. But it really should make TNA feel like jackasses because they've really botched this one. And I guess they can't afford it. I don't know what it is, but dude, the Hardys are pretty over, guys. And they immediately insert into the picture and they immediately take the titles. And I've mentioned this on Twitter and it got retweeted and people said, agree with me. I felt like it was Enzo and Cass's time, and the Hardys came in like LeBron on the chase down block and deleted the shit out of that opportunity.
That is exactly what happened. Oof. Enzo and Cass the week before is like, yeah, we're finally tasting gold. And then Vince knocks on the door like, by the way, we signed the Hardys. You guys are going to be in a ladder match. No more titles. Thanks. And walks out.
She's and not like, only that, they're like pushed out of the title picture because it's going to Cesaro and Sheamus because they won the tag team match on Raw. Yeah. So they've been completely shoved out of the title picture. So it's like their storybook moment probably won't happen until like next year.
Listen, they got to take one for the team. The Hardys put in time for this. Like, I just want to see them broken. Maybe they tell a revised version of the broken story because you can't assume that everyone in the audience knows it, you know?
No, so they have to fix it.
Yeah, maybe Vince just wants it to play out on his television, which is cool. I'm down for that. And then, let's see, we have Cena and Nikki Bella versus Miz and Maryse. It's pretty much just an engagement. Did you see that ring, though?
Yeah, that's the first thing I said. I said, goddamn that rock. I was like, look at this thing. Like, look, the match, it was what it was. Miz was incredibly over, which is a testament to how much people appreciate his improvements as a talent and as a mouthpiece. He's so good. But yeah, the match was blah. The ring was incredible. And Cena and Nikki are doing exactly what the Miz and Mari said they were going to do, and they're going to disappear.
When you proposed, how big was the ring? Was the ring like knockout big? Like
No. I proposed years ago. So I didn't.
This is like pre-BET Andreas?
Yeah. I mean, I still was making good money, and we had a nice house and everything. But no, I mean, it pales in comparison to what we just saw.
Yeah, so, you're very low-key anyway.
Yeah. But fuck, that ring was huge. Good for John Cena and Nikki Bella. And people were like, yo, he could buy like 12 of those rings. That was nothing.
Oh, yeah, nah, that was light work. And it was probably free because it was on television.
Yeah, that's true.
Seth Rollins versus Triple H. Match went too long.
Yeah, it was a long, self-indulgent Triple H match.
Yeah.
And it's
the longest match of the night. And there's no reason for that.
For no reason. And then the stipulation, it was a no DQ match. But the thing that stood out to me most, which I've been yelling about on Twitter for weeks, Samoa Joe didn't even show up. Why do we even bring him to Raw for him to do nothing at WrestleMania? In a non-sanctioned match, he didn't even come out. I didn't understand this. I also didn't understand the logic when they were outside the ring. And they were like doing some spot, and Triple H went and grabbed the sledgehammer to do nothing with it. What the fuck was that about?
Minor tease to the sledgehammer? I don't know.
It was just like to get a rise out of the crowd and be like, psych, we're never using this. It was like, okay. Yeah, this match went too long. I'm glad Seth Rollins won. Hopefully, maybe he goes to SmackDown. I don't know what's about to happen, but I'm glad this feud is over. I was looking forward to this too. It sucked the air right out of that building.
Yeah.
And I was at home, like, ugh.
Then we get Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt. Only 10-minute match. I like the weird-ass graphics on the mat.
This match was terrible.
I love all like fucking mystical, wishy-washy stuff. I thought that was dope. The match could have been better, though.
Dude, everything about this. I've been griping about this since it started. Because before Randy Orton joined the Wyatt family, they had a feud, if people remember, and nobody cared. So they had to make this a bigger feud by making Randy part of the Wyatt family. And then we had this goofy-ass match with this dumb-ass finish and these silly-ass graphics. And then we took the damn title off of Bray Wyatt. What was
Wyatt,
the point of
Wyatt actually of worked very strong during that match, though.
For 10 minutes? But what was
and
the
point? And then Orton got him for 30 seconds. He caught him with an RKO. That was it for Orton. That's all he did.
This was such a horribly put together match. Like the mind games, quote unquote. So here's the thing. So Kel, if you're laying down on the floor and I put a projection of like maggots around you in a projection, you can't see them because you're on the floor.
Okay, I believe he was trying to get up from the floor and saw the maggots. And two, my mind is blown because how do you get the maggots on the mat without having a shadow around Randy Orton?
Well, whatever they
riddle
did,
riddle me this. The mat turned into maggots. It had to be projected from the bottom up because everything was completely covered. That's the shit you don't think about, huh? Genius.
The shit that I don't care about. Watching the referee roll out of the ring every time they had a projection and he had to roll his ass back into the ring. Did you notice that? The referee would like leave?
Yeah. I thought he was scared. I thought he was hammering it
up. No. Dude, this match is so goofy. And the fact that this feud is continuing makes me sick. And I hated it.
Maybe not for long. I don't know. We'll see with the shakeup.
The shakeup, they won't touch these two. They won't. Somebody from this circle has to go. Luke Harper has to go. Somebody got to go. But this match was trash.
You want to talk trash? Lesnar Goldberg.
This match wasn't trash.
Lesnar Goldberg?
It wasn't trash.
It had four moves. It was better than what you anticipated. That does not make it not trash.
It makes it better than Orton versus Wyatt. That's for goddamn sure.
I don't know. this shit is a generous 4 minutes.
Like, I legit laughed the entire match. Like, I sat on my couch and was howling. Because I knew it was much better than I expected it to be. Which is not much. But it was like two guys. It's like two kids playing video games. And one, they're playing Street Fighter. And one's like Ryu. And the other one's Ken. And one does a fireball. And one does like the all-you-can uppercut. And that's the only fucking moves they know.
Yep. And then you occasionally get the little spinny kick.
Yeah, like they spam that shit. And I was entertained by it. Like, I was like, okay, cool. Because I wished it wasn't for the title, but it was far more entertaining than them going long like that. I expected them to with like a 4 minute stare down. They just went right to it and they got out of there. And I was fine with that. Like, look, I was fine. I thought it was much better than, like, I was more invested, and the crowd clearly was more invested in this match than they were Wyatt and Orton.
Yeah, because like, it was quick. It was fast paced.
Quick and hard hitting. It was like, not to, people be like, get out of here. But it was like the Hagler Hearns of like wrestling matches. It was quick, it was violent, and it ended. I'm good with that. It didn't linger too long. There wasn't any like specialty bullshit. There was like three or four moves, like one knee that Goldberg threw in there, and it was over. Shouldn't have been for the title though. I don't care what anybody says.
And then we have Women's SmackDown's championship match, Naomi show, pretty much. It was all about Naomi, so.
Yeah, I thought they were going to get cut, but they made it. Naomi won.
It's only a 5-minute match. Roman Reigns versus Undertaker. Roman goes clean.
This match, and I'm not saying ugh because Roman Reigns won. I'm saying ugh because this match was bad. Well, Undertaker's body can't do it anymore. There were really awkward spots in this match. It was very slow paced. And for like a 7-hour WrestleMania, this is the worst match you could possibly put on last. Like, yeah. I get it, what you were trying to do for the sentimental value of Undertaker leaving it all in the ring.
And they did that.
But it just wasn't a good match.
No, but the exit and, leaving the gloves in the ring, MMA style. And the jacket, and then going down in the little elevator shit.
No, people were so tired, they wanted to get the hell out of there. Like, it was, dude, that
shit's late on the East Coast.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you got kids that got to go to school Monday morning, they ain't going to school Monday morning.
Yeah, nah.
That's a long night. Too long. The match was – I didn't particularly care for the match. Roman's a better wrestler than a lot of people give him credit for, including myself. But this just – it didn't click.
He's a good wrestler, just not a good character.
But it's just,
he's learned how to wrestle.
But this match just didn't click. I was like, whatever. The exit was great. Thankfully, hopefully this is truly the end of Undertaker. But it should have been. I get why it's main event because you couldn't put Lesnar on there as main event. Wyatt and Orton would have shit the entire bed if they would have put that on last. But this didn't do it for me.
Me either. Now we go to the Raw after Mania. Looks like we're getting Reigns versus Lesnar.
But when are we getting the Reigns versus Lesnar?
Not until SummerSlam, it looks like, because first they're going to play up Braun Strowman versus Lesnar, which is probably his next pay-per-view date.
I have this sinking feeling that they could hypothetically try to push this to WrestleMania as the only two guys that beat The Undertaker.
Oh, and headline next year's WrestleMania? That would be four in a row for Reigns?
I mean, do you really expect Reigns not to headline the next WrestleMania?
Yes, please, God, with all the other talent, CM Punk is going to come and fucking kick McMahon in the testicles.
You're begging for it, but you don't believe that Roman Reigns is not going to headline WrestleMania. You would err on the side of caution that he's probably going to headline the next WrestleMania.
Yeah, I'm not betting my fucking life on it.
So it depends. So if they do this feud at WrestleMania or they do it at SummerSlam, it's the only two guys that beat Undertaker at WrestleMania. Correct. There's your angle. So, yeah, yuck. However, kudos for the opening segment of Raw, because good Lord, that crowd was on fire. And Reigns is—he's a better man than me. Shit, they were giving Reigns the business. That it wasn't like it was fuck you, Roman, like asshole shit. Like, dude, that crowd was relentless. And all he says is "My yard now," and he left. And I can't even tell if he's a heel or a babyface. I don't know what the hell happened, but I thought it was great. he didn't have to say anything else. I thought it was a really, really great way to start off Raw.
Yeah, I mean, the way it ended the night before with the booze, McMahon just loves any reaction. And he says it publicly. There's no such thing as a bad reaction as long as there's a reaction. And to keep Roman Reigns as the chosen one, McMahon's puppet, is probably the best way to make him a heel. Honestly, yeah. If he turned heel, there'll be so many people happy that he'd lose heat. The only way to keep the heat on him and keep him getting booed and, you know, just hated in every arena is by doing this. Give him every opportunity in the book.
So I enjoyed that. Raw, aside from that, was kind of uneventful. Not a lot happened.
No, Finn came back at the end.
So I guess we can fast forward to that because it's really – Kurt Angle got named general manager. We'll see how that works out. Hardys won.
Yeah, but then we got the new tag team, the Revivals.
Yes, the Revival came in and completely handed the New Day their ass, which was fantastic. I thought it was the best way you could start off with the Revival. That was great. Great call-up. We'll see. Hopefully they don't turn into the goddamn vaudevillains. But going to the Finn thing was way too predictable. The moment that Jericho got put out of that match and they was like, oh, we'll find you somebody, you knew it was going to be Balor.
Oh, yeah.
And even when you found out it was Balor, which it was great, he had the interest and everything, I just had a hard time digesting that Finn Balor is like, yeah, I'm going to tag with you. You broke my fucking shoulder 6 months ago. We're cool. Like, I just thought it was odd. And I get WWE booking wants you to forget about that when people turn babyface. But it's just one of those things that stuck with me. I was like, I want Finn to turn heel. Because everybody expected him to come back. There was no surprise in Finn returning. The surprise would have been if he would have turned heel on Rollins. And formed a stable with Joe and Kevin Owens.
Yeah, which could still happen.
Yeah, it won't happen now.
I mean, we saw the pairing. You never know. You don't know how this is going to play out. He might turn on Owens. I mean, he might turn on Rollins. So it's still a possibility. It's up in the air. Like you said, not too much on Raw. A couple call-ups. The return of Emma as regular-ass Emma. Well, heel Emma.
The same Emma that we were left with. I mean, they repackaged her to be herself. That was smart. All right.
And then we have SmackDown after Mania, which was much better.
No, it wasn't. SmackDown was a shitty show.
It wasn't a shitty show.
That show sucked.
AJ Styles, the Knock debut, even though I understand your point. We talked about this, like, I think in our wrestling group chat, where it made no sense to come out against The Miz and not say anything.
Dude, all right. SmackDown sucked. Right? Here's why. It sucked. There was no good wrestling on SmackDown. I mean, we had Corbin and Ambrose, but nobody was invested in that shit. And you had Naomi and Alexa Bliss. And then you had that horrible tag team match with the return of Eric Roman for no good goddamn reason. And Bray Wyatt against Randy Orton and Luke Harper, which is another thing that I'm just like, Luke's just rolling with Randy Orton now? He got you kicked out of the family? Now y'all cool? I don't understand.
Another turn. Wait for it. You're so unless impatient now.
Unless one of them goes to Raw.
You're so impatient.
I think might have. Dude, I'm impatient for a reason. This don't make any. Dude, nobody cared about this tag team match. Nobody cares. Now they're going to do what? The House of Horrors? Oh, my God. Like, we really got to wait for this pay-per-view? And that pay-per-view is not until May. The middle of May.
Oh, that's deep.
So well, I got to sit here.
Yeah, it's a long build. You want long builds.
Not for this. Not for a feud that I didn't like.
Now you're being picky.
I'm not being picky. I'm being honest. This feud sucks. It's been terrible. It's not a good feud.
Oh, let's not disrespect my boy Ty Dillinger in his debut.
Yes, Ty was great. We're going over on Curt Hawkins. Although I had a problem with how they brought out Ty Dillinger. They could have like counted down to 10 and then he came out instead of just going 10 and he just comes out. Build towards it. Give me something. But dude, the Nakamura thing, The Miz comes out, dresses John Cena, and Maurice is Nikki. Which is hilarious because for a minute there I was like, is that John? Posture, everything Miz did was great. But Knock interrupts them and does nothing and then leaves.
That's it.
So it was like the weirdest debut. Dude, SmackDown sucked. SmackDown was not a good SmackDown. It was like they could have did that same show in like 30 minutes. Hey, it's Dillinger. Hey, it's Nakamura. And
hey, we're out.
AJ shakes hands with Shane, basically says, so long, SmackDown. Because the moment he said, I'm not leaving SmackDown, I was like, AJ, you're leaving SmackDown. That was pretty obvious. So the tag match with SmackDown, I don't know. It was not a good post-Mania show, in my opinion. It was only good because we had call-ups.
That's all I look forward to in these things. Just show me the call-ups.
I look towards great angles. Like, they gave me nothing. Like, after SmackDown ended, I was looking at it. I was like, well, what am I supposed to do next week? Nothing here. It's continuing except for Orton and Wyatt.
Yeah, I don't know who's feuding with who, but I'm interested in finding out.
I guess.
Yeah, so everything else we got to build and we got to wait for, man. That was our full Mania weekend recap. NXT is going to have a slow build. Everything else as well. Andreas will get over it, and somehow we'll end up at SummerSlam, and he'll be like, man, we got to go.
No.
Because we'll get some of the matchups we want. Yeah, you will.
Maybe.
You might cave.
Maybe. Randy Orton's not a top babyface. He shouldn't be carrying the title on SmackDown unless he was a heel.
Yeah, we'll see. Listen, we got time. We got time. Let's reserve our judgments for the shakeup. Next week, we'll have our own shakeup on the show. We'll talk about what actually happens in the real one, where we would put people, who would get demoted to NXT, who would come
out. Bye, Apollo. So long, Apollo Crews. Back to NXT you go.
Oh, just spoiler alerted it all the way. So Andreas wants to get rid of Apollo Crews. I second that. We're going through all of that next week. Thank you guys for joining us on the show. Make sure you follow us on social media at The Corner LSN on everything. I'm at Kel Dansby on every platform. He is at Andreas Hale on everything as well. That's our show for this week. Until next week, we're out.
Peace.